Over the last few days, we've talked about the importance of understanding your emotions and the importance of getting a good diagnosis and some really important aspects of, you know, seeking treatment for mental health issues and some of that, those kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to talk about how to deal with some of those problems, in particular, anxiety. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can deal with these things without medication, right, without even, you know, going out and getting formal, formal treatment, but a formal diagnosis.
Right.
But, you know, when you can sense what's going on, mm-hmm, you can then, you know, there's some steps that you can take on your own, right, to start managing some of these symptoms.
Right. In a way, this is an extension of the issue that we talked about a few,
yeah,
days ago with the woman from the UK who is struggling with
right,
anxiety and depression, and do I need a diagnosis and all that. And this is sort of an extension of that discussion,
mm-hmm,
an elaboration of that, mm-hmm, discussion. The title is Dealing with Anxiety Without Turning to Drugs. Anxiety, and he begins appropriately,
mm-hmm,
with the statement that anxiety is a normal human experience.
Right, and we have this recurring theme once again,
yeah,
where he comes out and says, when I was 14, I was incredibly anxious.
Right.
You know,
started when he was 12.
Yeah,
with a bad
right,
interaction with a girl. He
right,
asked a girl to go out, and it was sort of a traumatic experience for
mm-hmm
him. And he had anxiety, and he self discloses and says, "Yes, I have anxiety." And
but the anxiety is normal.
But it's normal. It's a normal human experience.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be pathological.
Right.
It's a normal experience. The problem with anxiety, as he rightly states, is that anxiety can motivate you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a
mm-hmm
major commitment coming up, and it's producing anxiety in me, but that anxiety is turning into motivation.
Right.
It's also motivating me to get started on this project
mm-hmm
so that I get it finished before the deadline,
right,
which is in 4 days. It also is debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, anxiety can be motivating. On the other hand, it can be debilitating.
Right.
And you have to deal with the debilitating part. Okay.
Right.
So it can be a positive motivation or a negative debilitating.
And this is a reflection of what we were talking about yesterday in
right,
how you label it, how you
right,
identify it. You know,
mm-hmm,
if you identify it as anxiety that is, you know, dangerous or anxiety that is going to do you harm emotionally, psychologically,
right,
relationship-wise, whatever the case may be, then you're going to respond to it in one way.
Right.
If you see it as anxiety that's getting you motivated
right,
or should create drive, then you're going to respond to it in a different way.
Right.
And, you know, the problem that often happens when you identify it as, you know, sort of in a fear
mm-hmm
perspective,
mm-hmm, right,
is that then you start to avoid it.
Right. That's right. That's one of the things that we do.
Right.
And so when it becomes problematic, then we start to use things to manage
right,
the anxiety or to manage the stress. Stress is the same thing.
Right.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Stress, fear, anxiety,
mm-hmm,
they're all the same. We respond to them similarly. I shouldn't
right,
say they're all the same. We respond to
right,
them similarly. And one of the things that we do is we withdraw.
Yeah.
Okay. You just avoid it.
Yeah. And you all listening or watching will see where we're going with this. But we begin, especially in childhood, with
mm-hmm
complete avoidance. You know, if you're really nervous about a test
yeah,
or about a presentation you have to do at school,
mm-hmm,
you don't go to school that day.
You don't go to school.
If you're
avoid,
really nervous about, you know, playing sports, you
mm-hmm
choose not to play sports, or
right,
if you don't want to go to certain places, you just don't go there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so as children, we completely avoid these circumstances
right,
that create anxiety for us.
Mm-hmm.
As we get older, we start to look for other ways to avoid them.
Right.
We may still not go, and then we end up staying at home, and
mm-hmm
we may develop something like agoraphobia, where we
right,
are too fearful to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
Or we go to those places, we do those things that create the anxiety, but we avoid the anxiety by consuming something,
right,
either a medication or some type of substance
mm-hmm
that helps us avoid the distress, the anxiety associated with doing that activity.
Right. Yeah, because what we have to remember when we're dealing with something like anxiety or fear or stress or depression or any of these problematic feelings, one of the things, it's a combination of things. Yeah. It's, first of all, you have these physical symptoms.
Right.
You know, you talk about heartbeat and, mm-hmm. you know, all that.
And they're discomforting.
Right.
I mean, they feel horrible.
And but they motivate you to do something about it.
Right.
I mean, when you feel pain, for example, pain is a motivator to
right.
do something,
mm-hmm.
you know, get some help.
Yeah.
So one is the physical symptoms. But also, what you have to be careful of is that when you experience these things chronically,
mm-hmm.
and so we're not talking about once in a while, but we're talking about this really becomes problematic when
mm-hmm.
it happens regularly or on a chronic basis. You actually are getting some brain changes
right.
in some important subcortical structures.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is you're getting some chemical changes
right.
in the brain. And so these feelings are producing chemical and physiologic, anatomical changes in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want to avoid. That's
right.
why you want to deal with them.
Right.
Okay. You want symptom relief,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to remember that you have chemical changes that are occurring that are
right.
not good for you.
Right.
And you have anatomical things. You have structures in
right.
your brain that are being affected by this.
Right.
Because remember, the brain gets good at what it does repeatedly. So
mm-hmm.
if you're chronically anxious, your brain is going to get good at being chronically anxious.
Right.
You're going to produce those chemicals, and you're going to stimulate those brain structures that make you anxious.
Right.
Okay. So you do need to be careful, and you do need to take decisive action.
Right. And let's just, you know, be honest and direct. The easiest way to deal with something that
mm-hmm.
creates those feelings is to avoid it.
To avoid it. That's
I
right.
mean, if you have test anxiety,
mm-hmm.
the fastest way to relieve that test anxiety is to not take the test.
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Even though it's illogical, even
right.
though you know there are going to be bad consequences.
Even though you know that if you just because you skip school on the day of the test
right.
doesn't mean that you're not going to have to take it.
But it's temporary relief.
It's
okay?
temporary
that's,
relief.
That I want to relieve myself of the symptoms.
Right.
Okay.
And then as we do that, all we do, all that is really
right.
doing
mm-hmm.
is making the anxiety worse.
Right.
Because you're not dealing with the anxiety, you're just avoiding the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, like any other problem in our life, you know, if paying your electric bill is a problem and you manage that problem by avoiding it, well, you know, it won't be long before your electricity is turned off. The obligation isn't going to go away. It's just going to get worse.
I get terrible anxiety making my car payment.
Yeah.
But if I miss a couple of them, they're
going to
come and get the car. They'll come and repossess the car.
Right.
So, yes, withdrawal or avoidance is one way of relieving the symptoms,
mm-hmm.
okay? But as he states, rightly,
mm-hmm.
It's a temporary fix,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's not going to fix the problem. So
right.
withdrawing is not going to fix the problem. That's one way to do it,
right.
okay? Another way to do it is our friends' substances.
Right, and as we said just a moment ago, I think that the way that I see it is that substances are just another way to avoid.
It takes care of your symptoms,
mm-hmm.
okay? He states, love this little paragraph that he put in, he discovered the wonderful benefits of alcohol
mm-hmm.
at a party when he was, I think he was still in high school,
mm-hmm.
and somebody, he went to a party, oh no, it was a camp. There was an overnight camp that they
right.
had, and one of the boys brought vodka,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he said immediately it brought him symptomatic relief.
Right.
Okay. And he was hooked. He said,
mm-hmm.
This made me feel better.
Right.
It made me more social.
Mm-hmm.
I started to relax. I was less inhibited. And he loved it at first sip. Okay?
Right.
Because it relieved those symptoms.
Right.
The problem with two problems with alcohol. One is it also is temporary because you're only going to get that feel. And you don't deal with the root cause.
Mm-hmm.
If you're treating the symptoms, you're not dealing with the root cause.
Right.
And you have the problem of dependence.
Right.
Because if you take drugs or alcohol, you're going to become dependent on them
mm-hmm.
to manage your anxiety and
right.
your stress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just another way of avoiding by you know, relieving the symptoms
mm-hmm.
Artificially
right.
Without dealing with the root cause, without dealing with why you're anxious about something.
Right.
And it creates a dependence on whatever this other substance is.
Right. You know, as patients sit in our offices or go to their doctors, If you have anxiety or depression or you're stressed, you have fears, you really have three choices. You can either live with it, mm-hmm. and some people choose to live with it. They just say, this is how I am. I'm an anxious person. I can't do anything about it, and I will be anxious the rest of my life. Okay. So you can choose to live with it.
Yeah.
Second, you can avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And third, you can use substance abuse.
Right.
You can begin to abuse drugs and alcohol.
Right.
Okay? So you do have those three choices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another choice is you can seek medication
mm-hmm.
for the disorder. Mm-hmm. But what he's advocating, but even with medication,
that's also a temporary.
Do you want to be on medication the rest of your life? We don't want you to take certain classes of drugs because they are just temporary symptomatic relief,
mm-hmm.
and they're not supposed to be taken long term.
Right.
Okay. So even some therapeutic agents
mm-hmm.
Are not meant to be taken long term.
Right.
Okay. So even if you go, well, I'm going to take drugs, you're still not going to take. I don't think you're going to take drugs for the rest of your life.
Okay.
The drugs are meant to make you available
mm-hmm.
to do the other to make the changes you need to make. We did a podcast. I think it was a podcast that we did, and I know we've talked about it in the office, that frequently people take medication to manage a dysfunctional life.
Right.
You should be changing your dysfunctional life, not taking medications to maintain a dysfunctional life.
Yeah.
And I would put this in that fourth mm-hmm. category, is that if you're just taking, maybe you should change something about your life.
Yeah.
Get to the root cause. Okay.
Yeah.
So he moves to a fifth set, mm-hmm. and that's when he talks about doing it without drugs.
Right.
He gives us five other, mm-hmm. I think there are five other ways of dealing with anxiety
right.
that would not include drugs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And as we're getting to those strategies,
mm-hmm.
the thing that I like to remind my patients and people that I'm working with who are struggling with anxiety is that anxiety is a physiological phenomenon
right.
that we interpret and we label as anxiety, but mm-hmm. it is very much so a physiological phenomenon. It has those physical symptoms. You can feel your blood pressure. You mm-hmm. can feel your heart rate increasing. You can feel respiratory rate increasing. You can feel the jittery shakiness and mm-hmm. everything. There are those neurological symptoms. It's difficult to concentrate. There are things that happen in the brain, but all of this is rooted and caused by known
mm-hmm.
physiological events.
Right.
That hypothalamic pituitary mm-hmm. adrenal axis. It gets mm-hmm. stimulated,
right.
and so it releases all these chemicals into your body,
mm-hmm.
and it causes your what we call the sympathetic mm-hmm. nervous system to become overactivated, and there you are. That's anxiety,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and it could be other things too. But that's one of the things we label it as right. is anxiety. So when we think about treatment, yes, substances, whether it's Xanax or alcohol, or anything else.
Antidepressant, anti-anxiety, whatever
right.
the drug is.
Mm-hmm. The goal of those medications is to stop that system from kicking right. into overdrive.
Yeah, because people who are anxious tend to have an overactive worry circuit.
Right.
I mean, their brains are a little bit more sensitive in those regions,
right.
okay? And so that's what you're getting mm-hmm. under control.
Right.
Drugs is one
right.
way to do it, but it's
right.
not the only way to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is as soon as a person who is, say, using Xanax
mm-hmm.
or alcohol
right.
as a strategy or mm-hmm. intervention plan,
right.
as soon as they start feeling some of those symptoms of anxiety, whether mm-hmm. it's, that again, that increased heart mm-hmm. rate, maybe some
right.
sweatiness or
yeah.
Fidgetiness or something like that, as soon as they start feeling those symptoms,
They
identify it as anxiety
right.
and they'll reach in for
right.
that substance mm-hmm. to stop the symptoms.
Some people do it prophylactically.
That's true.
I know I'm going to be nervous, so I take a flask of alcohol with
right.
me. I know I'm going to be nervous, so I drop a couple Xanax in a baggie and bring
right.
them with me.
Right.
Because I know I'm going to be nervous.
Mm-hmm.
We're asking that you use the different approaches.
But knowing that you're going to be anxious is exactly
right.
the where we now go into the need for some of these
right.
other strategies.
Because mm-hmm.
if you know you're going to be anxious, then let's go ahead and start preventing the anxiety
right.
cycle from happening.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he talks about in the rest of this article,
right.
is how then do we cope with these symptoms and
right.
behaviors and experiences without
mm-hmm.
medication.
Right.
when we look at these medications, and I like that he kind of gets into the neurotransmitters a little bit. You don't like it?
Well, we don't need to.
But except for the point that Xanax and alcohol, the point of all of those is to increase a transmitter called GABA. And GABA just inhibits activity
in the
brain.
It's the brain's inhibitory neurotransmitter.
Yeah, it just relaxes things.
Right.
But what we know is that things like meditation and yoga and some of these other things that we're going to talk about also increase GABA.
They do the same thing. I think that's the important part, is that all the drugs that you would take act on a specific neurotransmitter called GABA. But so does meditation.
Right.
So does yoga. So does running. So do a lot of other lifting weights. You know,
right?
Very physical, an intense physical workout will also make these same brain changes.
Right.
So we talk about the brain being affected by anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to turn off those circuits.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can do it with drugs,
mm-hmm.
or you can do it with these other things.
Huh.
Okay. If you do it with the other things, you don't risk dependence.
Right.
Okay. And you carry the treatment with you. No matter where you are, you can use these other things. You don't have to worry about bringing alcohol or bringing medication with you. You have the treatments inside you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, so we'll go through these different
mm-hmm.
strategies. The first thing is mindfulness and meditation.
Right.
When you're anxious, if you think about those times,
mm-hmm.
typically what's happening is you're thinking about either the future or the past.
Right.
You're either thinking, what if? And so I'm going to go, I got to go on a flight. And
mm-hmm.
so what if this happens? What if there's turbulence?
Right.
What if I'm sitting next to somebody that I don't want to sit next to? What if there's a crying baby? What if?
What ifs?
All the what ifs mm-hmm. about the future.
Right.
Or sometimes we're anxious about the should have, could have's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should have done this. I should have done that. And so we get stuck in this anxiety cycle thinking about either the future or the past.
Mm-hmm.
What mindfulness and meditation can do is bring you to right now.
Right.
You know, think about where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're safe. Everything's cool right now. There's nothing happening. There's no crying baby right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever decisions you made in the past, you're still alive. You're still functioning. You're still okay.
Mm-hmm.
So just think about and focus on right now. Control
mm-hmm.
your physiological symptoms. Control
That's
your
right.
breathing. Control your, you know, we can control our heart rate.
Right.
We can do all of those things. Just relax now.
You know, many people don't like this because it feels new agey.
Mm-hmm.
It feels green. It feels hippie-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they apply all, and they're embarrassed
mm-hmm.
to do it. Okay. Look, you're doing it in private.
Right.
Okay. Just try it. See if it works.
Right.
But give it an honest effort.
Right.
It really will work.
Mm-hmm.
And
the research is really strong.
There's tons of research on
right.
this on this notion. And all you have to do is get back to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Stay where you are now. Don't worry about what might happen when you get to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just focus on, is everything okay now? Yes, you're in the car. You're on your way.
Right.
Everything is okay right now. And just sort of stay in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And don't start to spiral into the future.
Right.
Or start worrying about the past.
Yeah.
Because worrying about the past can also
right.
be a problem. You know, I made some stupid mistakes, or I made a stupid mistake. Okay, done. It's in
mm-hmm.
the past. You can't change it. So what are you
right.
doing right now?
Right.
Okay. And so by meditation, we mean just getting yourself back to now.
And you may benefit from listening to some music or some nature
right.
sounds. A guided meditation could be really
mm-hmm.
effective. But if you just want to listen to some soft music or nature
right.
sounds, you know, you can focus your thinking in this way. I've never been comfortable with the idea. Not comfortable with it isn't the right word. I have always been unable to clear my mind.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can't not think about something. My brain just won't let me do that. However, I can focus myself for short periods of time
right.
on something really specific. So
mm-hmm.
if you're listening to soft music or some
right.
nature sounds, you know, a couple of things that you could do, for example, are, you know, start at your toes and just think about every area of your body. So you're thinking
right.
about your big toe and then your second toe, and just, you know, as you're sitting there with your eyes closed, just work your way through your body and think
mm-hmm.
about all that. You don't have to necessarily think about relaxing it. You don't necessarily have to think about doing anything with it. Mm-hmm. You're just bringing yourself to right now.
Yeah, because sometimes if you're working real hard to relax, mm-hmm. you're actually stressing yourself out.
Right.
All we want you to do is think about something else. Get your mind, start thinking about your toes or your fingers, or it doesn't have to be nature. It doesn't have, quite frankly, when I hear those nature sounds, I want to hurl something out of my sphere of influence because I can't stand birds chirping and everything.
What about crickets?
No.
Well, it's cicadas. God,
no.
Cicadas are so loud
here. Be quiet. Everybody be quiet, you know. This is cicada season for us. I lived in someplace one time, they crawl out of the ground every 7 years, and it was a plague of those
every
things.
Year is 7 years here. They are so loud.
They were
here.
All over the place. Do whatever works for you. Right. That's what I tell my patients. I say, if you don't feel like, you know, saying, well, you don't have to say anything, do anything, listen to it. What works for you?
Right.
All I want you to do is I want you to just be able to focus on something else.
Right.
Don't keep fighting this thing.
Right.
Just focus on something else. It will work.
Right.
But you have to force yourself to do it. You have to practice.
And if you don't want to think about all the different body stuff, another easy strategy is to think about drawing an outline of yourself.
Right.
You know, as you're sitting there, just, you know, close your eyes and imagine, you know, drawing an outline of your body and just really thinking about that way and just kind of go around your body a couple times. Very simple, but very, very effective.
You know, counting sheep, when people say they can't sleep, we count sheep. Why do you count sheep? What is the point of counting sheep? It brings your mind to something else, and it's mindless. You know, it's like everybody can count, but your brain is someplace else, and that's all you want to do is you want to slow down the worry circuit. Okay, by counting sheep, because you can't count sheep and nobody worries about counting sheep. You can't count sheep.
I'm worried about the sheep making it over the fence, because if they don't make it
over the fence,
it's like, what happens?
Only
if one of them gets stuck.
Whoever thought about that, right? Who ever thought about that?
Who made the fence so tall?
You see?
That's what I'm saying.
They raised.
And I've never seen sheep jump like that before.
Oh, they're good at jumping.
Not over a fence. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So.
That's mindfulness.
Right. Number two is biofeedback. Now, biofeedback typically is going to require you to go somewhere or to see someone. However, there are home devices that you can get that you can do some of this stuff at home, with just hooking it up to your computer and doing different things to work on your focus.
Right.
But the idea here is that you have stuff connected to your head. Or to your body, and so it's not just neurofeedback; it's biofeedback. So it could be looking at it could be something that you wear on your wrist to look at your heart rate, or it could be something that you put on your skin to look at if you're getting sweaty or anything like that. But the idea here is that you're working on controlling your biological responses to things, and so you'll have that skin conduction, or you'll have some kind of measurement happening in real time. As you're working to calm yourself down. Mm-hmm. And so you can watch the values on the screen kind of change as you're working to regain control of yourself.
Yeah, the brain produces these four very characteristic waveforms. Some are fast, some are slow. And the idea with neurofeedback is you consciously can focus on one or more of those, and you can change it with practice.
Right.
By changing your thinking, you can change the pattern. And so it's, again, a wealth of research. Mm-hmm. It's been documented, clearly documented for ADHD and some other, and anxiety and some other disorders. So you could do neurofeedback, which would be a non-invasive, non-drug approach to dealing with anxiety.
Absolutely.
And very effective, very easy to use.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. The third thing that he mentions is cognitive behavioral therapy. Right. Now again, you know, obviously, if we're talking about real cognitive behavioral therapy, we're talking about going to see a therapist or a counselor or a psychologist or someone like that.
Right.
And that person would typically, or you know, if they're offering CBT, hopefully they're trained in CBT, so they're offering a very specific approach to dealing with and managing your anxiety. However, a lot of the perspectives that are brought into cognitive behavioral therapy are not too dissimilar from things that we think about in self-help books and that you may have read in other from other sources that just talk about addressing and dealing with how you're thinking about things.
Right. And it would be probably better, at least in the beginning, to go to somebody who does know how to do this. They don't necessarily have to be a trained CBT person, because sometimes training is for teaching purposes, not for clinical purposes. So as long as somebody understands basically how it works, you change your thinking to change your behavior.
Right.
Okay. And again, doesn't work for everybody. Some people are able to do it. Some are able to talk themselves into or out of things more readily than others. But it is another approach that involves changing your thinking.
Right.
How do you think about this? We talked about the different emotions, recognizing your emotions. And once I began to identify my emotions more accurately, I was able to have a much better response to my children.
Right.
Okay. And so that's what CBT does. Right. It changes your thinking.
Yeah. Another one that we've talked about before that's not listed in this article that we've talked about before is metacognitive therapy. We did a podcast on it earlier this year on metacognitive therapy. Right. And that is an approach where, again, it's something that you can do on your own. But it's great if you work with a professional who can help you with it.
Right.
But metacognitive therapy encourages you to think about why you're thinking about things.
Right.
So if you're anxious about something, it encourages you to confront that anxiety and ask yourself, why are you worrying about it? Mm-hmm. And so if you have a test tomorrow and you're really anxious about the test tomorrow, instead of saying, I'm going to distract myself, I'm going to try to think of something else, which is more cognitive behavioral.
Right.
Instead, why am I worried about this? Why am I thinking about this? Well, it's because I have a low B in the class, and I haven't really studied enough. Mm-hmm. And so we talked earlier about how anxiety can create motivation. Mm-hmm. Now you've identified why you're worried about it to use that as motivation to then go study more. And now you're dealing with why you're anxious about it.
Positive approach.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So. Number four.
Yoga?
Is yoga. It's sort of the physical version of meditation.
Right, that's true.
In some ways.
Well, it is, because in order, Taekwondo and the martial arts do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The movements are so precise.
Tai Chi, right?
Mm-hmm. That you can't do anything except think about the movement.
Right.
Okay. And by clearing your head of the anxiety-producing information and filling it in with something else, you start to lose the anxiety because you're focused on something else. You can do it mentally, or you can do it with yoga or Tai Chi or Taekwondo.
Yeah.
The youngsters who do Taekwondo will often say, it's really helped me to learn how to focus because I have to focus on doing those moves.
The form sets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So yoga is really good.
Yoga is good.
It is challenging. We should do yoga. We should. But just because you're a guy doesn't mean you don't do yoga. Guys do yoga too. There's an ex-professional wrestler who has a real men do yoga or something like that. Yeah. He has a whole line of stuff that does that. But it is very helpful in dealing with some of the symptoms associated with anxiety. But focus and all that in general.
I know a fellow who got rid of lower back pain by going to yoga.
Yeah.
And he had other benefits. But he said the biggest one was he got rid of lower back pain.
It increases strength. It increases flexibility. Right. All important things as we get older. So, all right. And number five is a sort of a hodgepodge.
Right.
And that is just healthy lifestyle choices.
Right.
Well, that sounds familiar. We've talked about the core four.
Right.
That we've talked about before.
Right.
So eating healthy, a good healthy diet of fresh vegetables, as much whole food as possible.
That's right.
Avoiding simple carbohydrates and processed foods and things like that are great ways to decrease stress in your body. Sleep
better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sleep is important. What I like saying, instead of saying you need to get 8 to 10 hours, what I like to say is you need to get as much as you need to feel rested in the morning.
Right.
You know?
To be able to start your day.
Right. If that's 6 hours, it's 6 hours.
Don't you think it's true that if a person gets up in the morning and you just cannot get going, you're either going to sleep at the wrong time or you're getting too little or too much sleep. There's something wrong with your sleep cycle. If you wake up in the morning and just cannot get out of bed,
You're trying to break your sleep cycle at the wrong part of the cycle.
That's right. Yeah?
So mm-hmm. shifting it a little, maybe 30 or 45 minutes either right. way, a little bit more or a little bit less,
right.
may solve that problem for right. you.
So don't underestimate the value of sleep right. in as an intervention.
Right.
You know, we talk about food as medicine, sleep as medicine.
And how many times have you talked to somebody and they say, you know, I sleep 8 hours every night, yeah. but man, when I get up in the morning, I feel so tired. Right. Well, you know what? If you shifted it by maybe 30 or 45 minutes, right. mm-hmm. and you were getting 7.5 or 7.25 hours
right.
of sleep,
right.
even though it's less than the 8 hours that we typically think of,
right.
you may feel great when you wake up in the morning.
That's right.
You know, just
right.
shifting it a little bit to hit it in that right part of right. the sleep cycle.
Yeah, it's not the number of hours you sleep. It's mm-hmm. There are other factors involved. So
right.
experiment with your and we may do a podcast in a later time. The simplest way to change sleep, to get better sleep hygiene, is just to keep a very good diary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Track what you're doing, what mm-hmm. you've eaten, what time you went to bed, so that you can keep track of,
absolutely.
Oh, it looks like 9:30. Every time I go to bed at 9:30, I get up in the morning and I feel okay.
Yeah.
But you have to chart that.
Yeah.
Don't rely on your memory. Write it down.
Yeah. And an easy way to think about how much sleep you need is to look on the weekends.
Yeah, right.
You know, we sleep late on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. yes. But typically we're staying up later on Friday night.
Right.
So look at how much time you're sleeping on Saturday mm-hmm. Or Friday night rather. And that's going to give you a pretty clear idea as to what your sleep cycle is like, because usually we don't get up with alarms or anything like that on Saturdays, right. unless you're us.
We don't need alarms.
That's right.
We've been getting up.
Yeah. No alarms. Now, the next, another good healthy habit is avoiding stimulant things.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Avoid stimulants.
Caffeine, nicotine. Mm-hmm. Nicotine is a very interesting substance, but I have certainly seen lots of patients who struggle with anxiety mm-hmm. and sure enough, as you charted, as you mm-hmm. said, you know, you're looking at sort of the pattern of behaviors.
Right.
Every time he put a dip in, within 30 minutes, he was having a panic attack.
Really?
Yeah. And you wow. think, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, mm-hmm. I wonder why he hasn't put this together. But, you know, when you're living and you're just going day to day, you don't
every
think
time.
About this thing. Every time he put in a
wow.
dip, within 30 minutes, he was having a panic attack. And so, maybe we don't
yeah.
use that. And see. And so
sure enough.
So mm-hmm. avoid, you know, if you're really struggling with anxiety, maybe avoiding caffeine and nicotine and
right. I would, because what you're
like
doing,
that.
We talk about the worry circuit and GABA, what you're mm-hmm. you're drinking those substances and they just keep stimulating the worry
right.
circuit.
Absolutely.
And you want to do just the opposite.
Right. And the last piece, you know, he has a couple other things here about taking your medication
right.
as prescribed and things like that. But the last thing actually isn't listed here, but is mm-hmm. going to be really important, and that is exercise,
right.
You know, exercise is a wonderful way,
mm-hmm.
Especially physical exercise, cardio, but lifting weights. You
right.
know, we talked about GABA earlier,
mm-hmm.
right? GABA is the primary inhibitory
right.
neurotransmitter, and it
mm-hmm.
kind of calms everything down. That comes with relaxation and some
right.
of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you work out? Well, you're really straining your muscle.
Right.
You're making your muscles work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get sore. And what does
right.
your body do to deal with being sore?
Mm-hmm.
It releases endogenous opiates,
right.
right? It releases chemicals to make you, to relieve
mm-hmm.
pain.
Right.
And so when we think about things that anxious people tend to abuse, substances
right.
that anxious people
right.
tend to abuse, the opiates are another thing. You know,
that's
they'll
right.
take pain medication and some
mm-hmm.
of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exercising is a great way to use your body's own source
right.
of opiates to help deal with that stress.
Right. We all have endogenous opioids,
mm-hmm.
endogenous morphine. And when you're in pain,
yeah.
when you tax your muscles, anytime
right.
you push yourself hard,
mm-hmm.
Your brain will release these endorphins,
right.
okay? And they have exactly the same effect
right.
that Xanax has.
Absolutely.
Okay? They do the same thing on the same brain structures and the same brain chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So, and intense, that's what I meant. It has to be an intense workout.
Yeah, if you really want to get up there like that, yeah.
Right, it could be a lengthy workout, like golf,
mm-hmm.
or it has to be a short, intense workout, like running or lifting weights
mm-hmm.
or swimming.
Right.
Either one will do the same thing.
Right. Right. Well, and like we talked about, that hypothalamic pituitary adrenal
mm-hmm.
axis that we were talking about, it releases
mm-hmm.
adrenaline and cortisol.
Right.
Well, what does exercise require? adrenaline.
Right.
And so by exercising, you're using up that adrenaline right. instead of letting it just sort of hang out in your nothing. Body and just right. make you, you know, freak
make
out a little
crazy.
Bit.
Make you crazy.
Yeah.
Crawl the walls.
Absolutely. So, mm-hmm. so okay. we there's lots of strategies and ideas and perspectives mm-hmm. in this article that you should check out. The link, of course, is always, as always, yeah. is in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But read through those and see yeah. what you think.
Yep. Love to have your opinion about this.
So. Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you, as always. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Then that's it for today.
That is.
All right. Well.
Another week.
Another week gone.
Yeah.
Until next time. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.